This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
Got the number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
Cut him every trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, why don't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
I stand by what I said yesterday. Good morning. January the 27th, 2021. DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN. I stand by it. I love the open. I'm not embarrassed to say it. I think that open is better than the open we used to have. It puts me in a better mood. And a day I typically don't like, which is a Wednesday, I'm now in a good mood. So I apologize for that.
Don't apologize. Listen, embrace your feelings. I love it too. I don't put as much sauce on it as you do because I appreciate what our guys behind the glass do, but it's a fantastic open. I give him tons of credit. I love every second of it.
Yeah, at this point, I'm just going to embrace it, man. I like it. I like the direction that we're going in, and if it puts you in a good mood, Dave Rothenberg, because you're the driver of the show, then that's going to set everything off for us. That just tees everything up.
Beautiful. So we're all in agreement. And
there
by
we
the
go.
Way, I still stand by, Rick. I know hump day is your day. I don't enjoy the Wednesday. Wednesday is a difficult day for me for some reason.
You got to suck it up, baby. You got to suck it up. I mean, you're driving this thing. I don't need you in the front seat while Canty and I are in the back, and you're singing Once I Was 7 Years Old, crying. I don't need that.
Got a beautiful tweet. I think you guys got it as well. 11-week-old daughter woke up at 2:30 this morning. She just fell asleep again. Oh, well, I guess no sleep at all tonight. Hashtag patiently waiting until 5 a.m.
Love it. Love it. There's nothing. I'll tell you what, though. There's nothing better than starting your morning at 2 a.m., and watching your basketball team make Joe Ingles look like Luka Doncic. I love that. It's my favorite thing to do.
I found out that this is my 10-year-old watching the game last night. They have a delay in school, so we let him stay up a little bit later. And I find out that Joe Ingles' nickname, apparently in like the gaming world and on Nintendo and PS4 and that kind of stuff, is Jiggly Joe. So the Knicks got taken to school by Jiggly Joe last night.
He's relatable, man. He's relatable. First half was good. I mean, first half was really good. Austin Rivers was great. And then, I mean, it's the last game of a four-game road trip. Utah's a better team. I mean, Mike Conley took over in the third quarter. I mean, still, yeah, I mean, you had a one-point lead going into the fourth quarter, and then just the wheels fell right off, and they gave up the ghost, and unfortunately, they're 1-3. I mean, the game that really aggravates me the most wasn't necessarily the last two, was more that Sacramento Kings game. That's the one that aggravated me on the road trip. In all honesty, I didn't expect them to go into Utah and win.
No, but you change your expectations as the game progresses, right? And I agree with you. I mean, Utah's one of the better teams in the NBA. But when you lead by 15 and you got Austin Rivers, you know, looking like Michael Jordan, you think to yourself, well, there's a pretty good chance we're going to win this game. And when you have a lead like that at the half, right, what were you up by 13 at the half?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you thought you had a good chance to win the game. Odds are, right, in your favor, you're going to win the game. And to lose by double digits after leading by 13 at the half, that's not a good feeling.
No, it's not a good feeling, but you realize what Austin Rivers was doing in the second quarter wasn't sustainable, and the Utah Jazz were one of the hottest teams in the league going into last night's game. I mean, they had won 8 games in a row, and, you know, this is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league. They came into that game number one in makes with 17 per and number two in percentage at 40. So you knew even with a 15-point lead in the second quarter that this team could put up buckets in bunches at any point, and that's exactly what happened in that third quarter. It was Mike Conley and Bogdanovich, and they just put on a show. And they went on a 20-3 run, and that was the catalyst for them being able to close out. But in looking at the Knicks in the second half, only 12 buckets in the second half, it's one of those situations where you realize the deficiency that they have in the point guard position. Emmanuel Quickley is a guy that we like, but he's inconsistent, and Elfrid Payton leaves a lot to be desired. So when you don't have a playmaker, a creator that can, you know, kind of keep you in those games when it becomes closing time, you're going to struggle, and that's exactly what happened when the Jazz went on their run.
Yeah, I don't care that Austin Rivers has 3 fouls in the first half. I could care less. You got to ride him. You have to ride that hot streak. I mean, they put him on the bench. Alec Burks was not good last night.
No, he was not
at all. And then all of a sudden, I mean, he ends up starting the third quarter. You bring Austin Rivers off the bench. He doesn't make a shot in the second half. Hit his first 10. He's 0-for-4 in the second half. You got to ride that out, man, because there. I mean, scoring-wise, I mean, Canty makes a great point, is the definition of a young player in the league is they're inconsistent, right? Like, young players are inconsistent. Like, they'll have games where they're great, like you saw Quickley have against Portland, and you'll have games like this where he doesn't shoot well and he's not good. And then when you couple that with the fact that Alfred Payton is just an average point guard, and most average players are also inconsistent, and you're talking about the most important position in the sport is the point guard position in today's NBA. And that's where you have a humongous hole with this team right now, is the point guard position.
Well, look at what got the Jazz going in the third quarter. That was all Mike Conley. That was all him.
That's the crazy part. Mitchell wasn't even good last night.
He was
9 points last night?
Yeah, I think it was 3-for-15 from the field, Dave. Mm-hmm. He was not good last night.
And he must have been scoreless for the first 20 minutes of the game, too.
But, Dave, that's a really good Jazz team. Fact is, they don't need him to be good in order to win games. They got it from Conley last night, they got it from Bogdanovich, and they got it from Rudy Gobert, who does a lot of the little things, does a lot of the dirty work to give that team an advantage. I mean, Rudy Gobert, what was he, 18 points, 19 boards?
Yeah, yep. And he's such a presence around the rim. What, do you have 4 or 5 blocks also?
Exactly, but his opportunity to dominate the glass, to give them rim protection, he does all of those things that gives them that hidden advantage. And on a night like last night, when that team wasn't shooting well, or not as well as they typically do, that's what you need. And they got the contributions from the guys, that the supporting cast, when their stars didn't necessarily have it. The Knicks don't have that, Dave.
No.
If Julius Randle doesn't go for a triple-double, they're not going to have a chance to be competitive in most games.
No, but I guess the thing that's frustrating, and I agree with Rick, is you had a guy that was having one of those games, right? I mean, Austin Rivers was just, for whatever reason, was having an out-of-body experience, and he picks up his third foul, and you're like, all right, well that's it. Now we're going to give him to the bench? No. I'd ride him until he's got nothing left. If he fouls out in the middle of the third quarter, then so be it. But I'm not putting him on the bench when he's 10-for-10 from the floor.
Yeah, that's one of those things in hindsight that I'm sure that Thibs would like to have back. I mean, the fact that he was going into halftime with all that momentum and he was feeling good, maybe you put him back out there to start the second half. But, I mean, when you start talking about your rotations and guys understanding their roles, maybe there was a set plan that Thibs had going into that game that he didn't want to deviate from. But whatever he did, it clearly wasn't the right decision, because in the second half, that team fell flat. Now, I don't know if it was fatigue or what. It's been a tough week on the road. But that's just one of those games that you look at and you're like, man, you wish the Knicks could have that one. Because they did start that first half. They played really, really well both ends of the court.
Yeah, they were great in the first half. All right, let's take a listen. Here's Austin Rivers. Said he didn't want to sit, but he kind of had to because of that foul trouble.
I got foul trouble. So I had 3 fouls. It took me out, which is totally understandable. And then I usually don't come in till the end of the, third. So it's just a lot of time. But that had nothing to do with me in the second half not being able to score. It had everything to do with it just wasn't there. I'm not going to force shots to just get my numbers up.
See, that's kind of my point. You never know when it's going to go away. You're red hot. You're 10 of 10. It's there. 3 fouls. All right. And I'm going to play him. I'm going to ride that until he's got nothing left. Because at some point soon, it's probably going to go away.
I think you have to. And I understand. Listen, if Thibs wants to start the third quarter with the same rotations, that's fine. I mean, bringing Austin Rivers, I know he likes that group together off the bench. That wasn't my issue. My issue was he gets the third foul. Like, you got to keep you have to ride him in that situation. Because, I mean, offensively, you're limited. You really are. I mean, if Julius Randle and R.J. Barrett aren't getting you points, I mean, who else? Because Alec Burks hasn't. I mean, he was not good at all last night. Quickley was not good. Payton wasn't good. So, I mean, it was really Austin Rivers was the one that was that third option. And he was on fire. Everything he shot went in. I didn't like it. That bothered me about that game last night.
Yeah, that's a tough one to digest. I'm sure as a fan of the team, you guys are going to struggle with that one. But, listen, you got to move on to the next one. They got the Cavs rolling in here this weekend. So you look at that as a bounce back game and you try to move forward from there. But, yeah, it's definitely a disappointing end to a road trip that started out with so much promise, because you beat the Golden State Warriors in their building. And the way that you did it, it was a decisive victory. Like, you outplayed them for 4 quarters. And so you felt like this team was finally starting to, figure some things out and form an identity. And then you lose 3 straight and you really weren't all that competitive in a game that you started out really, really good against one of the best teams in basketball.
I will say this. It's much better watching this Knicks team than it was last year. Like, at least you watch and there's moments where you enjoy, right? Last year was so bad for almost the entirety of the season. And I know you're 1-3 on the road trip, and I know you blow a double-digit lead in the second half last night. But I do feel like this organization is trending in the right direction. You think that's crazy, or you guys feel like that as well?
No, I feel the same way.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, absolutely do. I mean, either that, I think that Portland game was a perfect example. I mean, Lillard was out of his mind. You gave up 37 points in the first quarter. You were down huge, and you found a
last
way.
Last year, you lose that game by 25.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they shut it down. Like, I mean, last night, I mean, to hear, you know, Mike Breen talking about how they've thrown in the towel, like that, I mean, that does bother you. But, I mean, again, not to make excuses, it's the last game of a road trip. It's been a long road trip. You're on the West Coast, especially with, you know, how travel is now for these guys. They look like they were out of gas.
Yeah.
And Utah's got the second best record in the NBA, Dave.
No, Utah's really good. It's not the loss to Utah that bothers me somewhat.
It's the way you lost.
It's the fact that you led by 15 and you lost by double digits. I mean, we're talking about a 30-point swing within a 25-minute span. That's what upsets me about the game. Not the fact you lost to Utah.
But that's when talent takes over, too. And the fact that you don't have that point guard that can... I mean, they go into a zone defense, and you could tell the Knicks struggled. They went stagnant. Like, they don't have a go-to... They really don't right now have a go-to guy outside of Julius Randle that can get buckets when he needs buckets. Like, they're dependent on the point guard to break down the defense, and they don't have a guy that consistently can do that. They don't.
No, and when you struggle on offense and the other team starts hitting them from deep, that's going to be the problem. Last night, the Jazz had 10 three-point makes. So that 15-point lead, that 13-point lead that you have on at halftime, if you can't make shots and they start knocking them down, you know what that's going to be. You're probably going to take that L, and that's exactly what happened last night. But, I mean, moving forward, the Knicks have got to get more playmaking from their point guard position. If that doesn't happen, then you're going to see them in situations like that when it comes closing time in a lot of competitive games.
You know what, too? And the reason why I brought up the Sacramento game is because that feels like a game, especially after the Golden State win, that you should win that game.
What's a game team you look at and you're not, you know, overwhelmed by their talent, right? You look at them, you say, we're equal to what they are.
No, but let's focus on the real reason why that game aggravated me the most.
Because Halliburton played so well.
On both sides of the ball.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's a really good player. And that's what we needed. But, I mean, the jury's still out. But Halliburton definitely looks like he's a lot further along than Obi is at this point.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. All right, 800-919-3776. I don't know how to tease what we have coming up on the show without you guys saying it's self-serving, so I'll just do it. You can beat me up if that's what you deem necessary.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hall of Fame. Nobody goes in to the Hall, baseball-wise, and we'll get into that in a little bit as well. But the Mets, and I don't know if you feel like this, Rick, because it's like I think about the Mets, and I think that the right way to go is probably add another decent starter and Jackie Bradley and maybe another arm in the bullpen. I'm like, I think that's the way I want to go. And then I see this Bob Nightingale story that he says the Mets are the favorites to land Trevor Bauer, and they've made an offer, and all my excitement for the other avenue goes out the window. I'm like, oh, that's what you got to do, Trevor Bauer. Think of that rotation. Like, I'm so swayed by the high-priced free agent with the Mets right now.
No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, you got Trevor Bauer to the mix. Now, all of a sudden, you look at this rotation, and, I mean, you can make the argument that it's the best rotation in baseball. I mean, top to bottom. I mean, it's not like you're bringing in Trevor Bauer to be your ace. You already have, in my opinion, the best pitcher in baseball as your ace.
Mm-hmm. Think about the staff, Chris. If you added Bauer, you have DeGrom, you have Bauer, you have Stroman, you have Syndergaard when he returns.
Carrasco.
Right, you have Carrasco. You have Peterson. I mean,
you got Mats and you got Lucchese. You'll see what you end up getting from him. Yeah, you'd have a pretty good staff. You'd have a lot of depth. But in terms of your rotation, I mean, it would be amongst the best, if not the best in baseball. I mean, you have as dominant a 1-2 punch as anybody else in the sport. So that gives you a clear advantage, but you still have a hole in center field. You still have some other areas that you would want to address. You guys talked about the bullpen. I mean, there's still some things that you want to shore up, because guess what? Life in the National League East ain't getting no easier. You saw what the Phillies did in keeping Real Muto around. I mean, the Nationals are fortifying their roster. I mean, the Braves are probably the class of the division. So, I mean, you got your work cut out for you if you're the Mets, but adding Trevor Bauer, to me, that's That would be huge. I mean, that puts you right there with the Braves, in my opinion.
And now you have to figure out what you do. I mean, center field is a huge issue for me.
Well, what do you do? If you sign Bauer, can you have other signings?
Well, now you're just committed to going over the luxury threshold.
Yeah.
So you say to hell with the luxury threshold. We're all in on this thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's center field. Now we're talking about Albert, Almora. I mean, Jackie Bradley may be too expensive. It looks like he's probably around, 10, 11 million bucks. Kevin Pillar. Maybe it's Justin Wilson in the bullpen because you missed out on Brad Hand. And then there's also, the possibility of Chris Bryant on a one-year deal, trading for him to play third base.
And what's he at? He's at like 18, isn't he?
19 and a half.
Yeah.
One-year deal. But here's the thing, though. Do you use, and I know he said he wasn't going to go out and spend like a drunken sailor. But actually, you could make the argument as far as what's in the best interest of the owners coming up on a new CBA negotiation, everything else, like players complaining that none of these teams want to spend money. I mean, at least you'd have one team that's willing to go out and spend some money so you don't hear players complaining about it.
The players would. I think the players would love it if the Mets went out and spent
money. Saying if they don't, though, that's going to be the conversation, is that the owners are pulling back again. No one's spending money. How do you want us to have a legitimate negotiation if we know exactly what you're doing? You screwed us last year. Now, because you lost this money, you're trying to screw us again now in free agency, and you want us to bend over backwards for, expanded playoffs and everything else? It's already a contentious relationship.
Very much so.
And the fact that Trevor Bauer is a short-term deal, makes the most sense, because just with his personality, I don't know longevity-wise how long he would last in New York.
So what you're saying is you'd rather rent than buy.
Exactly right.
100%. What kind of deal are they talking about? Is it 4 years?
Somewhere 4 years, probably, I would say between, probably around $35 million-ish.
Oh. So you're looking at 4 for $120, something like that?
But think about who you're losing to, though.
A lot of money.
It's a ton of money, especially because you're going to pay Lindor. You already got DeGrom, maybe Conforto, but you'll lose. Syndergaard's going to be, you'd have to be okay with losing Syndergaard. Syndergaard's going to be a free agent. He's making 9.7, so he'll be gone. Stroman's making 19.
Yeah, you figure he's going to be gone. You're not going to pay him more than $19 million on a long-term deal.
Okay, so they're right there. You got the 30, and then you probably lose Mats too. So there's another five.
Now, I'm fine with losing Mats. I'm fine with losing Stroman. I don't want to lose Syndergaard. If he comes back and he gives you a good season, is that a foregone conclusion that I absolutely am going to lose him?
If he has a great season, he's already making 10.
How are you going to afford him is the question.
Especially
with keeping around Lindor and Conforto.
You got Lindor, Conforto, the Grom's deal again. I don't know how Brody Van Wagenen talked to Grom at the sign of that deal. It amazes me. That's the best thing he ever did for us.
It was by far.
By far. And then on top of it, Dave, you got Cano coming back too.
Right.
Next season.
Which is a whole heap of money.
So maybe this is the time. Maybe because the market is so suppressed that you just say, screw it. Let's do it now.
But you say suppressed, and you're right, but it wouldn't be a suppressed deal with Bauer. It'd still be a monster contract.
Well, it's suppressed. If this was a regular free agency, him coming off the season that he came on, and I know he hasn't, he hasn't had, a sustained period where he's had tons of success. It's been like a year and a half that he's been really, really good.
Right.
But, when you look at who was available starting pitching-wise in the season that he came off of, he's not accepting a short-term deal in regular free agency.
No. He would want a Garrett Cole deal.
Well, he wouldn't get a Garrett Cole deal. I don't think he's on that level. But he's talking, what Zach Wheeler got. There's what Patrick Corbin got. He's looking.
He wouldn't be talking about having a short-term deal with 3 or 4 years.
No.
Yeah. It'd be different.
But maybe this actually could be perfect, though, for the kind of personality he has. It's, to say combustible is probably an understatement. Go back to Cleveland when Terry Francona, one of the most respected,
threw the ball into center field. Yeah,
he threw it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, but that stuff, you do that in Cleveland, that's one thing.
Exactly.
Do that in New York, that you'd get destroyed for stuff like that. I could see, you say combustible. If he's great, whatever his antics are, I think it's fine. If he's not great here in New York, and he does some of the stuff that he's known to do, I think it's a very tough existence for him here.
Yeah, so maybe you just take advantage of the fact that the Mets fans will be all geeked up that you did sign him on a short-term deal and, just put your best foot forward here over the next couple of years and try to win a World Series. Just go all in now. I mean, he said 3 to 5 years. So maybe this is the time to take advantage of these opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you sign Trevor Bauer and you shore up center field and you just blow past the competitive balance tax with a Jackie Bradley Jr., you are absolutely a World Series contending team. There's no question about it in my mind. From a talent standpoint, I mean, you're right there with the big boys in the National League.
With anybody. Think of what, I mean, if you can go DeGrom, Bauer, Carrasco, Syndergaard,
Stroman,
and what happens? You get to the postseason, and now all of a sudden, the back end of your starting rotation becomes bullpen guys. If you could throw that out there, there's no team that has a better starting staff going into a series than you. None.
And you could probably move Mats to the bullpen too if you sign Bauer.
Yep.
You could put Mats in the bullpen, and that there's your lefty in the bullpen,
right? Or Lucchese as well, right?
I mean, but it, just Dave. I mean, to your point though, and we talked about this yesterday, how deep the NL East is going to be. I mean, look at Washington's rotation now. I mean, look at their first four. I mean, it'll be right there, absolutely, one of the best. But you're still looking at, I mean, the Braves rotation and the Nationals rotation are right there as well. It's a tough division, especially
it's the best division in baseball.
Just think about if they don't expand the playoffs, though. I mean, look at what's going on with you got the Dodgers. You got the Padres all right. Geared up. So there you go right there. One of those teams will win the West, and you figure the other one's going to get a wild card.
Absolutely. I figure the Braves right now win the division.
Okay, so then now it's you, the Phillies, and the Nationals competing for that second wild card.
And everybody else.
Well, yeah, and everyone else. But I would say that those probably, you would probably.
I would agree with you, but I mean, would you be shocked if the Cardinals had a good season?
I wouldn't be shocked because they're the Cardinals.
Exactly.
And maybe it's because the NL East just beats the hell out of each other. Because Miami is not a pushover team either.
No.
You got no easy games in that division. None.
If you get Bauer, I will say that if you get Bauer, you have to go to the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be the expectation. You'd be disappointed if you didn't.
Yeah.
You'd be horrified. Even if it's just back to what it was, where five teams go, if you get Bauer and you have that rotation, you add Lindor, you add Bauer, you have to go to the postseason.
This would make sense, though. If this was like the plan the entire time, is that the Mets would be patient with Bauer because they realized that, you know, it would be them and maybe the Angels that would be aggressive after him. And that's why you signed McCann instead of Realmuto, and how much money you saved in that deal. Because Realmuto was the guy if you wanted to get the best catcher, it was Realmuto. And then you decided, you know, that's just too much money. We don't want to spend that much money on Springer. This would make the most sense. The reason why you didn't want to spend that much, like, give out that much money for those two positions is because in the back of your mind
you had a chance to get Trevor Bauer on a short-term deal.
That was a possibility.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with them not paying a catcher $23 million a year. I have no problem with that, especially when you got McCann. And it's not the same caliber of player, but it's serviceable, and it's clearly an upgrade from what you had last year. So, I mean, he's going to make your pitching staff better. Now it's just a matter of filling in the other pieces. And the biggest glaring need right now for this team is a center fielder. So at some point, you're going to have to spend some money to address that.
Absolutely, you will. Now, I get a tweet from EElite23, Rick, and it's a good point. He says, good morning, DCR. The Mets should just sign Bradley, trade for Bryant, sign Odorizzi instead of Trevor Bauer. Too much baggage. I'd rather have the other guys. It's a fair point.
No, it's a great point. And that's the other name that we talked about. He has ties to the Mets. So that would make sense as well. I just don't know what his appetite is, like how, you know, what he's looking for as far as, you know, length of deal. And I mean, I like Odorizzi too, but I mean, I think Bauer is the best available.
Well, of course.
And I think Bauer's had more postseason success.
And you're going to lose three of these guys next season. I know you don't want to lose Noah Syndergaard, but he's coming back from Tommy John. So, no, I mean, who knows what he'll look like? But he'll be a free agent. Stroman's going to be a free agent. And you figure they're going to move on from Mats.
Which is fine.
So the fact that all of a sudden now I got, even if that happens, I'm going to still have DeGrom, Bauer, and Carrasco as my 1-2-3.
And Peterson, you got to figure he's going to be your 4 or 5.
Exactly right. So, I mean, it's still, I get what he's saying, but we really don't know how much money Steve Cohen is willing to get into the luxury threshold. I love that idea. Listen, those are the conversations you're having. If we don't add Bauer, what is it going to cost us trade-wise to get Chris Bryant? How much is, you know, Jackie Bradley or Albert Almora going to cost us in center field? And then, like, how does that... Because last year, I mean, let's face it. Last year, the offense wasn't the real issue for the Mets.
No. Their pitching was the problem.
And their defense. Their pitching and their defense was terrible. So I really feel like if you find that center fielder, that instantly you'll be better defensively in center field because that's what you're going to pay money for is the defense.
Better in left field.
And now all of a sudden you're better in left field. And if you get me, fingers crossed, it sounds like you're going to have the DH because both sides want it. They're just going back and forth now with negotiations. Is that if I can move Dom Smith to first base now, yep. I got Lindor at short, McNeil playing second where he's better. J.D. Davis is not a great third baseman. Chris Bryant is obviously better if you did that. I mean, and you got McCann behind the plate.
Yeah, you're an upgraded team by far. I think at the end of the day, no matter what they do, they're going to be a much better team than we saw last season.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN. It's DCR.
Very good cornhole player, Rick. You were excellent at the Mets game that day.
I had an advantage to him. You saw Canty couldn't even hold a sausage. He was that banged up.
He forgot to go into the game.
I don't believe in traveling underground.
He made the right choice after seeing
it. Thank you, Rico. I appreciate that.
You got to know where to pull the plug sometimes, yeah. David. The guy spent 25 minutes making this beautiful sausage for Canty.
He dropped it right on the floor.
He invested a whole lot into that, man. I told y'all what it was going to be when we were leading up to the tailgate. I'm going to need for you guys not to look at me with too much judgment because of that afternoon.
This is DCR.
The heavy set guy, I turn around, he's his shirt is off.
Aminu Muhammad, baby. Eat the ice cream off his belly.
On 98.7 ESPN.
It really was true, though. I turned around, and there was a large, large man shirtless at a night game. It's not like he could say, well, I was getting some sun. He was completely shirtless at a night Mets baseball game. It was a very odd look. Time now for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. You remember that guy, right, Rick?
I think I may have nudged him to take the shirt off.
Oh, it happened. See, that's what you are. You're the guy that pushes people to do things that are out of their comfort zone, and then they're the ones that are forever remembered.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, we're trying to have a good time. We're all, I mean, we've all been, you know, having one or two, or in Canty's case, 10 or 12 adult beverages. He offered us an ice cream. We said, nah, we're all set with the ice cream. And then I was like, you know what, it'd be great. Let's have him eat his ice cream off his beautiful belly. It was awesome.
I'll take the ice cream if you do it shirtless and eat it off your navel. Then exactly. I'd like an ice cream. Yes, please.
Exactly right.
You are a treat. By the way, 30 years ago today, we'll get into Major League Baseball and the Kuiper mock draft. Buster Olney going to join us at 7 o'clock. Stump Rothenberg, 6:45. Dan Graziano, 7:30. So a lot coming up today on DCR. 30 years ago today is a day that shaped my life. And I mean this sincerely. You have any idea? January 27th. 1991. Any idea what happened that day?
30 years ago today.
30 years ago today.
Shaped
my life. If this didn't happen, I would be... I don't know if I'd be with you guys right now.
Is it a football game?
It was.
Think I know the football game, Dave. Is this the infamous Scott Norwood?
Oh, Mr. Scotty Norwood lines up from 47 yards out, and then this happened.
Wait for it.
It's going to happen. Oh, we don't have it yet. All right.
Norwood assumes the position. Lindner waits to snap it. We wait. There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. Norwood missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
And that is courtesy of Jack Buck. How good is that? I mean, really, if that kick goes through, I don't know what happens. I don't know that I'm here with you guys today. I don't know that I'm the same person. I don't know that I'm married with children. Like, I could have gone on a bender, spiraled out of control. I don't know what happens if that kick goes through the uprights.
Let me ask you this, Dave. Were you naked when you celebrated that one, too?
I was not, because I was still living at home. I was 17. I was living at home with my parents. So it would have been odd to have become naked as I was watching that game. But I did.
Well, some would say it'd be odd to be naked around your children and your family.
Now, I thought about taking my pants off.
Just saying.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
Okay.
I do think that's fair. So I began the naked run in 2007. Giants beat the Cowboys, and somehow by the end of the game, I was completely naked. We're living in Raleigh, and Sherry's like, you're naked. Now, her friend came over, traveled down from New York for the Green Bay game later, that playoff run, and she goes, you have to promise me you will not become naked. And I said, I think that's fair. I will not become naked. And I did not. But then that's when the naked run started, and in 2007. But in 91, I was so we're watching the game in my parents' den, and they had a high ceiling. What'd you say?
I know that den well. Gorgeous.
Yeah, no, I know you do. So they have a high ceiling, right? And I'll just play along with you if you if that's the avenue you want to go in. He misses the kick. I jump so hard and high, and I throw my fist in the air. I put my hand through the ceiling. And they had to have like a handyman come over and plaster it.
I've seen you jump. Well, what are you? Is the house built for pilgrims? I don't know how high are the ceilings.
No. First of all, I was a different guy. I'm 17 years old, prime of my physical career.
I have a hard time believing that Dave Rothenberg, even at 17, after watching you play any sport, had a vertical high enough to go through the ceiling.
I'm telling you. I jumped to the hands fully extended, jumped in the air through the ceiling.
I'm gonna have to. I'm questioning how high the ceiling is.
7 foot ceilings, Rico.
No, I would say it's. I would say it's. I don't know. I would say maybe 9 feet.
No way. No way.
There's no chance.
I'm telling you.
No, there's zero chance. I don't know what happened to you then. If you're so excited you can jump high enough where a fist goes through a 9 foot ceiling.
Maybe it was eight. I don't know.
This could be the greatest fall off of athletic ability in the history of mankind.
What does that mean?
You can barely get off the ground now.
Well, I mean, this is 30 years later.
Dave.
Yes.
If the ceiling is 9 feet high, how tall are you at 17? 5'11"?
Probably 5'11". What I am now, I imagine, 5'11 and a half.
Okay, 5'11". That you jumped high enough to put a fist through the actual ceiling at 9 feet.
The ceiling is the roof.
With a fully extended arm?
I mean, you're still talking
about... Yeah, I don't
see
it, Dave. I don't see it.
Well, you cannot believe it. It happened. I lived it. They had to have the handyman come the next day and plaster it and paint it.
Nah, you need more people for your story, Dave, because I'm not buying it.
Did your dad throw you up? I don't know. Did you have a spotter? I don't understand.
I don't think so. I think it was pure. Don't you ever hear the stories when like a mother's baby is trapped under the car? She's able to lift up the car. That's what it was. It was one of those adrenaline moments.
It's a mother and her baby. And the
so
baby
this is very
die.
Similar to that. The it's Giants won the goal. Super Bowl when Norwood pushed the kick right.
I'm starting to question where you grew up. I thought I knew. I thought I'd been to the actual house. Gorgeous house, by the way. I'm questioning that now. There's no way the ceiling's... There is no way 9 foot ceiling you're putting a
maybe,
fist
listen, I can't confirm the height of the ceiling. It could be an 8 foot ceiling. You could. It could be.
Who is your dad? I mean, who is your dad? Willow? I mean, I don't...
Is an 8 foot ceiling a very small ceiling?
David the Gnome.
It seems... In a living room, it seems a little... Yeah, I mean, it seems like
when oh, you do my gosh.
When you do, like the tour of Boston, like when you say the sightseeing deal where they like take you through like Paul Revere's ride and everything else, and you see like the original houses, and because people were smaller,
it was one of those houses, Rico.
Yeah, it was
right.
One of those houses.
It was one of those houses. That's exactly what it was.
I can't vouch for the height of the ceiling, but I'm telling you that took place. And the
you're
fact
like,
that you guys
you're like Buddy
it,
the Elf. You're like Buddy
that's
the
exactly
Elf.
Exactly.
No one's
on
told
one
you.
Of the big moments in the history of my life, 30 years ago today. It's sad. It cuts me deeply.
This is like a little Frozen action, where you, like you've been raised by trolls.
So the nakedness started in the divisional round of the 2007 playoffs
against the Cowboys. Yeah, your game.
Does it, Dave? Does it bother you that that game still bothers me as much as it does?
No,
that game disgusts me. I just of all the games in my career, I always go back to that game, and
but
I go back to that
team. But you won a Super Bowl later on.
I know, Dave, but I'm just. That team should that was the best team I've ever been a part of, Dave. We talked about the roster a million times. Like that's the most talented team that I'd ever been around. 13-3, got it all in front of us. And New York Giants, a team that we throttled twice in the regular season, came in our house and beat us on the way to the Super Bowl.
So that's the one game in your college, high school, pro career that still bothers you.
It still bothers me, man. Patrick Creighton not catching that pass on third down still bothers me. Not tackling Amani Toomer on the sideline, watching him run in the end zone for a touchdown, still bothers me. Still bothers me to this day. Jerry Jones printing out those damn tickets before the game, still bothers me.
Does it bother you that Dave actually watches your games naked?
That's what should bother me more, Rico.
Well, that's not the norm. It's not like I would just typically walk in
naked.
On a Sunday and
I watch
be completely naked.
Hey, Christian, my favorite player. I watch you naked.
Watch you naked.
I got naked as the game progressed.
I gave you a strip tease while you were playing.
Yeah, basically. Well, because I got so angry. Like, there were plays that would happen. I'd get angry. I'd rip my shirt. Then I'd rip my T-shirt. I'd rip my sweatshirt.
So what would you do on the good plays that you really, really liked?
Just dance around and be excited.
Oh, okay.
That must be a sight. Your naked body dancing around.
Dancing around.
Oh, yeah,
excited.
No, it's a sight. It's a scene.
Knocking all kinds of things over.
Pants getting thrown on the wall. Yeah, but here's how many chairs. Like, please just don't break a wall. Just do not, please do not put your hand through a wall during this game. That's all I'm asking.
It feels like you missed your opportunity to, like, do the naked thing. Like, it seems like the Green Bay game, that situation with the friend coming over would have been a more appropriate time to maybe consider the nudity thing.
No.
Just to see what happened.
No.
Spice things up a little. Who knows?
No, I'm not looking for that. You're the one that's looking for that on Sundays. I'm not looking for that on Sundays.
I think every man is looking for that on Sundays.
Why not top off one win with another win, Dave?
Exactly. You can do two things. You can't. Yeah. I mean, you can't do two things at once.
You could double up, man.
I don't know. That was the furthest thing from my mind at that moment. We go into Green Bay. It's freezing. Like, I, you know how people, they, if someone else is hot, they feel hot. They're cold. Like, I felt freezing. I was shivering during that game. It was so cold. Look at Coughlin. The face is all red.
I don't know how. I mean, we couldn't be more different, me and you. I don't understand. I don't understand your mentality. I love you. I just don't understand your mentality sometimes. I play professional sports. Like, there would be times I would be getting, like, I'd be like, hey, Cass, I got to go to bed, pregame nap. And she'd be like, are you sure you need to go to bed? And I was like, I could. Nah, you know what? I could do it. I could use 15
minutes. Makes me feel light on my feet
exactly.
When I'm in the.
Got to get that poison out.
I don't want any part of it. Mid-game, I don't want any part of it. No part of it. Stop it.
Halftime?
I don't want to give up the meme.
Halftime? That halftime action?
It depends.
You missed it out, Dave. If
the Giants were in great shape at halftime, I could be convinced. If the Giants are down like 10 points at halftime, there's no way I want to be like that.
Dave, either way, it's a good proposition. If the Giants are losing, at least you can get a win at halftime. If they're winning, at least you can add on top of the win with another win.
I want it bad. Yeah, but this is the thing, though, Chris. This is what you're failing to understand. I get it now, is that he's not able, like, if the Giants are losing at halftime, Little Dave is
he's not able to get excited?
No.
No, he's depressed.
He's depressed. He goes into a shell like a frightened turtle. He doesn't want any part of anything. Like a eunuch. I don't want to give up the meat.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It's DCR.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I mean, really, if that kick goes through, I don't know what happens. I could have gone on a bender, spiraled out of control. I don't know what happens if that kick goes through the uprights.
Were you naked when you celebrated that one, too?
I was not. I was 17. I was living at home with my parents, so it would have been odd to have become naked as I was watching that game.
Well, some would say it'd be odd to be naked around your children and your family.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
This is DCR.
He misses the kick. I jump so hard and high, put my hand through the ceiling.
I've seen you jump. Is the house built for pilgrims? I don't know how high the ceiling is.
On 98.7 ESPN.
The 7 o'clock hour, the big hour on DCR 98.7 ESPN at DCR 98.7 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. And let's bring him in. I mean, he's clearly, now Rick said Mike Tenenbaum is his favorite buster. I'm gonna say it's you. I think you might be my favorite guest that we have here on the show.
You know, I heard that whole interview with Mike yesterday when I was out running errands, and I felt hurt. I felt like you guys were cheating on me.
And I don't blame you, and I'd like to just, you know, qualify my statement. You're my guy. You are my favorite guest that we have
Rick
on the show.
Rick turned on me. Rick absolutely turned on me. I'm kind of devastated, but, you know, we have other things to talk about.
Yeah, we certainly do. So I know you don't vote anymore, and I know the reason you don't vote anymore is probably for the exact reason of what went on yesterday, right?
Yep. 100%. I stopped voting in 2015. I felt that the Hall of Fame was very passive-aggressively hiding behind the writers, sort of angling the writers to, you know, to keep out some of the steroid-era players. You know, with the writers suddenly in 2005 deciding that the character clause, so to speak, was something that was, you know, determinant in whether or not a player was going to be in the Hall of Fame. And I really think, especially with what happened yesterday, what happened this winter, Omar Vizquel, domestic violence allegations, you know, Schilling's case, the longstanding PD case, I think it's time for the baseball writers to collectively insist that the Hall of Fame get out front and make the decisions about whether or not they want these guys in the Hall of Fame and stop leaving it to the writers to play morality, please.
Buster, how do you fix it? I know that's not an easy question, but, I mean, how do we fix it? Because, I mean, Curt Schilling just, I mean, what he did in his baseball career outside of all the stuff with social media and everything else, I mean, he's got Hall of Fame credentials.
That's exactly right. And look, you know, the last years I voted for Bonds and Clemens every year that they were on the ballot, because my feeling was I think you got to get a look at the players' careers within the context of their times. And baseball was saturated with PEDs during that time because of a collective failure by everybody in the sport. And whether you like it or not, that's what the sport was. And there are already guys in the Hall of Fame who use PEDs, and everybody knows it. You know, but when it comes to general character issues, okay, Manny Ramirez is on the ballot right now, and we know that despite the fact that he tested positive twice, was suspended twice by Major League Baseball, you know, he's a member in good standing as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. He's been employed by the Cubs. You know, other people, you know, Barry Bonds has been employed by teams. Roger Clemens has been employed by teams. The Hall of Fame puts these guys on the ballot, but they leave it to the writers. They hide behind the writers in determining whether or not, you know, Schilling's tweets or, you know, Bonds and Clemens' actions should be disqualifying for the Hall of Fame. And it's clear that the writers are twisted up and they're in a place where they really shouldn't be. Going forward, I think the writers absolutely should insist, no, we're not going to be the character police. You guys declare whether or not it's okay for Manny Ramirez, for Curt Schilling, for Barry Bonds, and for Roger Clemens to be in the Hall of Fame. And then we'll vote on it after you decide the issues of the character.
Buster, it seems like such a slippery slope when it comes to this character clause because there's so much gray area. And one of the things that we were trying to figure out is whether or not the baseball writers of America in the Hall of Fame are making the distinction when it comes to the character during a guy's playing career, or is it post-career factored in as well? Like, that's one of the things that we couldn't figure out.
Hey, Chris. I mean, slippery slope is exactly right. And imagine a slope with like a, you know, at 88 degrees.
you know, it's like a cliff.
It is. And think about it. The character clause was essentially obsolete up until Mark McGwire appeared on the ballot in 2006. Up until then, it hadn't been disqualifying for two. You had, and I don't mean to dump on individuals, but like drunks and people with domestic violence, and I mean all of that. The character clause was never used, and then Mark McGwire showed up, and all of a sudden, the character clause became a thing. Think about this: it's believed that the words of the character clause were drawn up by Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who was a segregationist.
Yep, he's a racist.
Who kept African Americans out of baseball, and just last summer, the Baseball Writers Association stripped Landis's name off their award, mm-hmm. and yet his words are determining whether or not players are getting the Hall of Fame. It's absurd, and it's absurd that some writers have let themselves be boxed into that corner.
It really is. It's an interesting conversation. Buster Olney with us here, 98.7 ESPN, all guests on DCR, PR via the Goodyear Hotline. All right, Buster, if Curt Schilling was well-liked among the baseball community, is this a slam dunk right now that he's a Hall of Famer?
Yes, I believe that. It's clear, you know, that the writers, there are some writers, and not all of them. I mean, shoot, he got placed in 71.7% of the ballots. It's pretty clear that some writers decided, you know what, I don't like his tweets. I don't like things he's putting out there, and that wind up costing him election to the Hall of Fame. Think about this, and I'll just spend. I wrote this in the fall of 2016, and man, this is on the front burner now when it comes to the whole character clause thing. I wrote in the fall of 2016, the writers better anticipate what they're going to do with David Ortiz, who's incredibly well liked, who's incredibly respected by the writers. You know, he's going to be eligible next year. His name appeared in a New York Times story about 15 years ago. You know, allegedly he is on a list of players who tested positive in 2003. Are the writers going to apply the same standard that they've applied for Clemens and Bonds and Schilling and not vote in, you know, Big Poppy. And I think that they're in a logic pretzel, and they're going to have a really difficult time getting out of it, which is, again, why I think right now the writers, to save themselves, they better basically go to the Hall of Fame and say, you guys decide these questions. It's a terrible place for journalists to be.
Buster only joins us here on the show. Buster, let's transition to team near and dear to my heart, the New York Mets.
Yes.
How realistic is it that the New York Mets signed Trevor Bauer?
I think it's very realistic, because the fact is that there are just not many teams out there willing to spend money. And Trevor Bauer, coming off a Cy Young caliber season, is looking to get paid in a big way. And quite frankly, there are just not many teams out there willing to spend. I think he's going to have a hard time, you know, finding teams willing to spend at the levels that he's looking for. You know, it's been interesting. I actually been working on a story on, you know, the Mets, and will the Mets blow through the luxury tax threshold and be willing to spend a lot of money? And what I got back from folks within the organization was, you know what? Yes, we're going to be looked at as being a team that is spending, you know, much more than other teams are willing to spend. But right now, it's like a soft real estate market. You're not going to be able to get someone like Trevor Bauer in 3 years at the price they probably can sign him at, because right now there's just not that many teams bidding. In 2 or 3 years, they will. And I think that Steve Cohen, I think the Mets recognize that and understand they have a chance to get a pretty good pitcher at a pretty good price.
Buster, one of the things that we've been talking about with the Mets is, you know, how they would benefit from being able to have a DH in the National League, and in particular, like the flexibility that they would have with the roster that they currently employ. My question to you is, where are we at with the negotiations between the players and the owners with the universal DH and with the expanded playoffs?
It really is like you've got a parent and a teenager, and with a teenager refusing to take out the trash. I mean, they're not talking, they're at loggerheads, and right now, you know, the union's perspective is, we're not doing that. We're not going to tie the universal DH to expanded playoffs. What the two sides really need is a deadline, like, to settle these things. Everybody in baseball believes that in the end, yes, there will be expanded playoffs. Yes, at some point there's going to be universal DH. The union doesn't want to be horse trading for the universal DH because it feels like it's giving up value. Whatever. They need to settle the issues at some point, and what they really need, it's been demonstrated time and again in the last couple of years, they need a deadline to force them to get into the same room in horse trade. It's disappointing that that hasn't been going on.
Well, Buster, isn't a universal DH beneficial for all parties involved? Because
everybody,
from an entertainment standpoint, it helps with the game in terms of being in a better position to attract more fans. Nobody wants to see the pitcher hit in the National League.
Chris, 100%, everybody wants it. It's good for the players. You know, guys like Nelson Cruz, guys like Marcell Ozuna, you know, if there's a universal DH, there's suddenly 15 more teams from the National League who could bid on them. It's good for the team side. The teams don't want their pitchers hitting anymore. They don't want their pitchers running the bases. You remember Chen Ming Wong, you know, hurting his foot, running the bases. The team.
I mean, Masahiro Tanaka
believed,
as well, yeah.
Exactly. They don't want their most valued assets being at risk. But the union's perspective is, yeah, because everybody wants it, why should we, you know, be giving up anything in negotiations in return for getting that? MLB has a different perspective. As they say, the expectation is, yes, eventually they'll get there. We just don't know, you know, how they're going to get there. I think it'll happen before they start the regular season.
Buster only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Because you're my favorite guest, I think I'm entitled to a multi-part question, so I'm going to go in
absolutely
that direction. Give me parameters if the Mets were to sign Bauer, what you think the kind of deal would look like. And if they do, Buster, does this mean that Jackie Bradley and Oda Rizzi and everyone else is off the table? Chris Bryant is off the table? Or you think there's a chance that Steve Cohen just says, you know what, to hell with the luxury threshold. I'm going crazy here.
Boy, it's a great question. First off, if they do sign Bauer, My guess is, I mean, we saw last winter where you had Garrett Cole getting, what, 9-325, whatever it is. He's not going to be close to that. You know, he doesn't have as much of a track record. I do think he's going to be close in terms of average annual value. I'm absolutely pulling a number out of my rear end here.
Sure.
I'm going to say 3 or 4 years at 30, 35 million a year. But, you know, from the Mets' perspective, it's going to be an accomplished pitcher without having to do a long-term thing. I think it's going to be more important for Trevor to get a higher average annual value. If they sign him, yeah. I mean, they could be involved in some of the other conversations because, as I mentioned, there is a feeling in the Mets organization like, look, there are guys out there. You can call the Cubs and say, we'll take Chris Bryant off your hand and we'll just give you a bag of balls. And the Cubs probably would do it because they're in a cost-cutting mode. But I don't. I think if they sign Bauer, because he is going to wind up being so expensive, that the volume of other deals will go down dramatically. On the other hand, you could just take that money that you would give to a Bauer and say, look, let's do Bryant, let's do Bradley, let's do a starting pitcher.
Oh, God, all these options with all this money to spend. Buster, last one from me. We were going back and forth yesterday. I mean, the Cactus League came out and said that they want to push the date. As far as, you know, spring training is concerned, I mean, what are you hearing? Like, what are the chances that we actually get a full 162 games this season?
I think there's a good chance that'll happen. First off, one thing to remember, you know, last year when they were having all their issues, the perspective was look, for Major League Baseball, because they're hearing from the disease experts, they wanted to get a representative season in, get the postseason in, and get out of Dodge because you had the wave coming. Keep in mind that in the fall coming up, you know, that by that point, the expectation is a lot of people will have gotten the vaccine. And so the idea of extending the season into November isn't crazy. You could, if you start later, you could make up those games at the back end of the thing. You could play double headers. I'm actually going to write a piece for this weekend after talking with people the last 48 hours who are saying, look, there's so much, the sport is going to be in such a better position to make an assessment on these questions if they just delay everything by a month. If they just say, you know what, we'll start spring training on March 15th. That means there's more time for vaccines, players having access, more fans potentially having access, better chance for fans at the stands at the end of the year. I think it's better for everybody if they simply deferred all the conversation for a month to see where they're at.
Buster, awesome stuff. We appreciate you. And you were number one coming in. You've entrenched that in my book. You are
well,
solidified.
Well, for you anyway. Not for Rick. I heard
no.
I heard the Love Fest yesterday.
No. Listen, he chooses Tenenbaum and I choose you. And that's fine.
Well,
I appreciate it. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon. You're our go-to baseball guy. Great stuff, Buster.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
All right, let's bring him in, Dan Graziano. Dan, good morning. How are you? Thanks for a couple minutes, as always.
It's my pleasure. How are you guys doing today?
Good. So I had a thought, and I could be completely off base here, but let me run it past you. I know you used to cover baseball. Do you by chance have a Hall of Fame vote now?
I do. Yeah, I still vote for the Hall of Fame. I always feel like I'm still voting on guys I covered, so I feel like that's all right. Once the ballot shows up with names of guys I didn't cover, or once they decide that I shouldn't vote anymore, I'm happy to give it up.
All right, so let me further that then. You have a vote. You voted in this most recent induction here. How did you vote? I'm interested in all three, on Schilling more specifically, and then of course Bonds and Clemens too.
Yeah, I don't vote for any of those guys. Never have. Did I vote for Schilling once upon a time? I don't know, but I don't vote for any of those guys.
So why do you not vote for Schilling anymore then? Bonds and Clemens, I get, but what's the basis of Schilling?
I mean, people get mad, but I mean, like, you know, my kids ask me who I vote for, and I like to be able to look them in the eye and tell them the truth. So I don't vote for Kershaw. I mean, like, this isn't – first of all, he's not a slam dunk case to begin with, right? So if you're borderline and you engage in the kind of disgusting, hateful public behavior that this guy has that's harmful to other human beings, I just don't see the reason to reward that with a plaque.
All right, Dan, let's focus on some NFL, right? And I just want to take a quick second. I want to move away from this. We have you on to talk NFL. Dave is obsessed. We've been carrying the Hall of Fame the entire show.
Not upset. I think it's an interesting conversation, and Dan obviously is a good person to speak on it.
No, I know, but I want to focus on what Dan is the best in the business at. Just quickly before I ask my question, Dan, your follow on Twitter, by the way, is one of my favorite follows. The level of sarcasm is so good.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's an outlet, man. Sometimes it's just helpful. Yeah.
The Buffalo Bills PAT, now they only have to kick five field goals instead of six. I loved it. All right, so what's going on with quarterbacks in the NFL right now? I mean, now they seem non-committal in L.A. with Jared Goff. I mean, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, what's your best guess as to what's going on right now?
I would love to know what's going on with the Rams, because they can't get out of Jared Goff. I mean, like, he's $27.5 million fully guaranteed this year. He's got another 25, 26 next year, of which 15.5 is already fully guaranteed. Like, it's a $61 million cap hit if they cut him, so that's impossible. And I don't know who's trading for it. So I'm not sure what they're trying to accomplish there. Maybe they're trying to let Goff know, and maybe his teammates know that, hey, look, we see that what's going on, and it's not good enough, and it's got to get better. But, it's strange to be so non-committal to the young quarterback to whom you gave that contract a couple of years ago. So, obviously, things have gone south there in terms of that relationship, but they are stuck with him. They could add somebody to the mix, and if it's cheap enough, they could, be in a situation where he becomes a backup, a highly paid backup. But they're in a tough spot with Jared Goff. I don't see any way they get out of that. The Aaron Rodgers stuff, I'm sure you guys did a lot yesterday and the day before. I mean, like, this is Green Bay doesn't have any intention of moving on from him this offseason. Makes a lot more sense for them financially and other ways to wait till next year if that's what they want to do. The talk yesterday was, does he want out? He seemed to throw cold water on that idea yesterday in his interview with Pat McAfee. So at this point, maybe that's simmering down. It's worth watching, because if he does want out, he has the ability to force their hand, and he would obviously be an attractive trade option. But right now, those include Matthew Stafford, who they've made public that they're going to try and move him at his request, and then Deshaun Watson, who we know is unhappy with Houston. So if those two guys are available in trade, as we believe they will be, the quarterback market this offseason becomes quite fascinating. And so, by the way, does the notion of NFL players being able to exert some degree of leverage over their situations that we haven't seen them have in the past. We've seen it with some guys, Jalen Ramsey here or there, a Jadeveon Clowney. But with quarterbacks, we haven't really seen it. So if that starts to happen, that's another turn in that direction for the NFL.
Dan, you mentioned the Goff contract and how it makes it hard for the Rams to move him if they wanted to try to go a different direction at the quarterback position. Looking at the Rodgers situation, how does that contract, dictate what they do this offseason if Aaron Rodgers does make it an untenable situation?
To trade Aaron Rodgers this offseason, the Packers would have to absorb a dead cap hit of about $31 million if they did it before the third day of the league year, about $38 million if they waited till after that. That's because of a roster bonus that's due that day that they have to pay and count. So that's a tough hit. It's significantly more than anyone has ever taken on in terms of dead money for a player that's no longer on their roster, and they would be doing it in a year where the cap is going down. Now, to do that, they'd have to be sure that they had a low-cost alternative on the roster, whether it's their current backup, Tim Boyle, or Jordan Love, who was the first-round pick last year. So they would be taking a step back. And it's a team that just went 13-3 and to the conference championship game 2 years in a row. So they don't have much interest in that. The acquiring team would get a pretty good deal on Aaron Rodgers, who has no guaranteed money left, and especially if the Packers already paid that roster bonus. So he'd be a very appealing trade opportunity. But again, the Packers have kind of made it clear that for football reasons that they have no interest in this. And economically, it would put them in a bad position and probably transform them into a team that would need to be in a rebuilding mode, which we don't often see from the Packers. So, I don't see it making sense for them. Again, unless he really made it untenable and forced their hand. And, that's far-fetched to me. I mean, they're still probably his best chance to make the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you, Dan. But could an option for the Packers, if he makes a big enough stink, be a post-June 1 designation?
Yeah, but if you do that, then you've already paid that roster bonus, right?
And you've tied that money up for the entire offseason, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And you don't get the cap relief. So, I mean, like, yeah, it's not – the post-June 1 designation is to ease the cap hit, but they're not going to be able to do that in this situation. The only thing they'd be shedding would be his salary. And yeah, you're right. You'd have to wait till June 2nd and carry that cap situation all the way through the summer.
Dan Graziano with us here, 98.7 ESPN, breaking down baseball and football, multi-talented. Do you look at Aaron Rodgers differently after losing that football game than you did prior to it? Like, there's been a lot of talk, and you've heard it, I'm sure, about Aaron Rodgers.
He always loses that game. How could you look at him differently? He lost that game four times.
So you do. No, so, look, you look at his career lesser than you would have had he won that game.
No, I'm not into the, you know, judge. I mean, I'd rather judge a guy on dozens of games than one, right? Or even four. Right? So, no, I think this is a brilliant player, an all-time great player, slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer, and I think it's unfortunate that he hasn't made more than one Super Bowl, because that stuff sticks to you and it becomes the kind of thing people say to knock you down. And I don't know why there would be any reason to want to knock down Aaron Rodgers or his career. So, no, I don't look at him differently. I think it's unfortunate for him that he didn't win. But, you know, guys, not everyone can win. So, yeah, I think it would have been better. I would have preferred to see him win, because then that narrative gets taken away from him a little bit, and I don't think he fully deserves it. Though I do want to know, and I haven't heard anybody asking yet, why he didn't run on third down.
That's a great question. At least he forces his hand. I mean, even if he picks, even if he doesn't get to the end zone, at least he maybe forces his hand to go for it there on fourth down. Dan, I know it's Tom Brady, and he's been to 9 Super Bowls. New team, COVID, no preseason games. I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but how surprised are you that Tom Brady took this team all the way to the Super Bowl?
I'm with you. We shouldn't be surprised, and yet somehow I am, right? Because this was supposed to be the year where continuity counted more than anything else. And they're throwing this thing together on the fly in Tampa Bay, and they had no offseason and all this, and yet there he is in the Super Bowl again. He is. I tweeted this the other day. He will have played in more than 18% of all Super Bowls ever. I mean, 11 of them were played before he was born. Like, this is insane. And you talk about a legacy. You talk about not being able to ding somebody. I mean, there is nothing to say anymore. Like, it is. It's way beyond settled in terms of his accomplishments and how far, and who knows? I mean, if he wins and he comes back next year, they're going to be one of the favorites to win it again. It's just, it's unimaginable what Tom Brady has done. And to do it with a new team, look, it's a loaded team. It's a stacked roster. If Tom Brady had stayed in New England and played with the same roster Cam Newton had this year, I don't think they're in the Super Bowl. But that said, it's a roster that has benefited from having him on it. They, you talk to the people there, the confidence they have as a result of having Tom Brady as their quarterback versus Jameis Winston, and no offense to Jameis, but he threw 30 interceptions last year. That hurts your confidence as a team, not to mention your field position and all kinds of things. So Brady has been everything they had hoped he would be when they signed him, which is the guy that sort of unlocked this super talented roster and gave it that little extra it needed to contend for and possibly win now a championship. You take your hat off and you marvel at it.
Dan, new head coach, new general manager down in Atlanta. A lot of people have been talking about all the different quarterbacks that are going to be on the marketplace. Is Matt Ryan going to get traded from the Falcons this offseason, or does he stay as their quarterback in 2021?
Yeah, interesting situation. And again, not to dig too deep into cap stuff and contract stuff, it would be a difficult move for Atlanta to carry his dead money this year if they traded him. Not to say if they found a good deal, they couldn't do it. I think that Atlanta's going to be in a little bit of a rebuild mode, and they know they're going to transition at that position over the next couple of years. Would not be at all surprised to see them draft a quarterback with that number 4 pick, or even move up if there's a guy they want. So I think they're thinking about the future at the position, but even if they did that, I think the more likely scenario is Ryan sticks around there for one more year and they develop the guy behind him. Never say never, but I think that's the most likely way for Atlanta to go.
All right, Dan, we appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week, Super Bowl week, leading up to Super Bowl 55. Good stuff, and we appreciate it.
See you guys. Thanks.
All right. He's very good. Big fan of Dan Graziano.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.